Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund. This podcast is being brought to you by the Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source to the litigation finance industry. Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Juji Carminati, Vice President of Business Development for LexShares. Founded in 2014, LexShares has leveraged its technology platform to evaluate over 1 million claims, many under $1 million in valuation. Prior to joining LexShares, Juji practiced complex commercial litigation at Weil, Gottschall & Manges, as well as Berg & Andruffy. She also founded The Woman's Lawyer, a law firm dedicated to representing victims of domestic abuse and sexual assault. Juji, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So LexShares has a really unique business model, so excited to get into this. You guys leverage a technology platform to source claims. Do you mind just diving into this for us? How does the tech work? What advantages does it provide over standard origination and analysis being done by most funders?
Absolutely. So the tech you're referring to is a software called Diamond Mine, and you are correct that LexShares is fairly unique in its use of that software. Late last year, we published a report called The Barometer that really delves into detail in the ways that this technology, Diamond Mine, looks at cases and scores them. And the barometer report has our analysis of over 30,000 cases reviewed by Diamond Mine. But to give you the short version right here, Diamond Mine is a software that goes through a variety of dockets and looks at certain keywords and amounts and types of cases and so on and so forth, and scores those cases out of a certain number of points. And if you get more than a certain number of points, then that case will get referred to the business development team, who will then reach out to the lawyers and ask them if they might be interested in submitting the case for review. And what is very interesting is that it allows for very much more precise, I would say, review of cases. Because it allows you to get through masses and masses, huge quantities of cases, and identify, yep, no, yes, no, in a more objective manner. But that's only the first threshold. I think once you've gone past that initial analysis, you're still looking at a subjective review with underwriters really delving into the merits of the case and the strength of the case and the strength of the team that is handling the case and the capitalization of the defendant, and how far into the case you are. So it's a blending of both technology that gives you that initial first look with a cause to create that first contact, but then you move into the human underwriting analysis of the matter.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And certainly you get the volume, which is great. You also get another benefit is you get to take on smaller claims that other funders won't touch. So when you're thinking about these smaller claims, are there differences when you evaluate these claims versus the larger cases, which you also take on? Are there certain variables that are more or less important? So I'd imagine if I think about smaller claims funding, I'd imagine things like duration risk and collectability, which are big hangups for a lot of funders. I'd imagine they might be less impactful given that there's less capital on the line. But how do you account for those types of things, and what do you prioritize when you're evaluating small claims?
LexShares looks at claims that require financing that is between $500,000 and $5 million. That tends to be our sweet spot right there. The $5 million is a soft cap. But you're right that we will look at cases where you're looking to get $500,000, $1 million, and they are smaller cases. I had this conversation recently, actually, with a law firm. And I told them it's actually just as easy or just as hard, depending on how you look at it, to get financing for a bigger case versus a smaller case, in the sense that the underwriting process is just as thorough and it's just as demanding. We will be looking at the same things, but obviously the underwriting team is looking at it differently, in the sense of you are correct. For starters, capitalization has a different threshold. If you're looking to collect $50 million or $100 million from your defendant, it's very different than if you're going after them for $5, $6, or $7 million, right? Like that you're looking at very different amount of capitalization. You're also maybe also looking at a different type of law firm. If you have you still want obviously high quality lawyers. You still want lawyers who know what they're doing, you still want to see a team, a place who can actually handle the matters that are coming to them, or a plan to grow that team, which is sometimes why people come for financing, because they want to hire more personnel, hire more lawyers, do what they need to do to use the, you know, to find the resources to properly go after these cases. But you are looking at different structures for that team. If you're looking at a smaller case and you have a smaller firm, then that makes sense. If you're looking at a very large case and you have only a solo, then you're probably gonna have hard questions about, can you really handle it? What's your path to success? What's your path to growth? So obviously, you know, that's what we're looking at. And then I think it, for us, definitely, you know, Matt Volsky, he is our general counsel and chief investment officer. He is very dedicated to this idea of funding justice. He really means it. And so for us, that's an opportunity when you go into smaller cases to really help folks who would otherwise not have access to justice if they could not have access to this financing. And so that's also kind of the angle that we're looking at. Like, this case is a case where it's a meritorious and it's a righteous case, and we want to help.
And when you look at the deal activity that's coming into LexShares right now, and you've been at this for a while, and you have there are ways for claimants to submit. You can submit a claim on the LexShares website, but you also do your own outreach. So where is most of the deal activity coming from, or how is it breaking down? Is it through law firms? Is it direct from the corporations or the claimants themselves, or maybe individuals, individual claimants? Are there brokers involved? How does that break down? And then also maybe in terms of legal sectors, like, are there certain legal sectors you're focusing on? Are there ones that are really popping right now? Can you get into that a bit for us?
Absolutely. So let's break it down. There are several parts of that question, and I want to answer them in an organized fashion. So let's start with, where are we seeing most activity? And you're right when you qualify that question with right now, because where we see activity can change, and it does change from quarter to quarter, from year to year. Right now, we are seeing a lot of activity among law firms, lawyers who are looking for litigation financing for their caseload. So that's really where we're seeing a lot of it. I am going to give a talk at the ABA Corporate Counsel Seminar just in a couple of weeks. And one of my efforts is to talk to corporate departments in-house. I just published an article on this topic. I keep, you know, posting about it. I'm going to talk about it. We would love to see more demand coming from the corporate sector, from in-house departments, because we would love to be able to explain how litigation financing can be a way to unlock potential value from claims earlier and help in-house departments not be such large cost centers. There's a very strong value proposition for in-house departments. But that is my pitch. Right now, we are seeing a lot more activity coming in from law firms and lawyers. We are definitely seeing a lot of activity in commercial and mass tort cases. If you read the barometer, you're going to see that what LexShares has really been focusing on, in the sense of those are the cases that Diamond Mine seems to prefer, they are going to be commercial litigation and trade secrets. So those are really kind of top of the list, and they really help get into that $500,000, $2 million financing range, because that's what you need to put forward a moderately sized commercial litigation or trade secret case. On the other hand, LexShares is also very interested in the mass torts area. That is certainly a part that is near and dear to my heart. I was a plaintiff's attorney before I started doing this. And we are very much looking into and interested and excited about mass torts. Certainly the latest J&J decision is helpful. There's been obviously a big swing towards Camp Lejeune throughout the industry. We are seeing a lot of, other cases similar to that, NEC and EC being one of them. So, mass torts, commercial cases, and trade secret is really where right now where it's at, with requests coming in from law firms and lawyers.
Yeah, male sports is definitely a big topic in the litigation funding world. I know we're focused on that as well. We have a digital event planned for, I believe, March. It's going to be on the mass torts topic. So it's definitely something that's been picking up a lot of steam over the last couple of years and is really reaching a crescendo right now. So that's the current picture for Lex shares. What about your thoughts on the year ahead? And I want to put that in the context of a recession, which we may or may not have. Who knows at this point? It sort of seemed like we might, and now it seems like we might not, but we still might. So let's say, for example, we do have a recession, or just hypothetically, there's a recession. Is this an opportunity for funders like LexShares to capitalize on, say, business interruption claims, bankruptcy, those types of things? Do you expect more claims coming into the pipeline if we do get that recession?
Let me start by pointing out that I'm a very old millennial and I started my legal career, my first year on the job was 2008 in Houston, Texas. And so it's interesting to me and sort of and somehow a little funny when folks talk about recession because millennials, there's this meme going around, you know. With somebody looking very depressed and saying, "Millennials, after going through the 15th once in a century event in the last 12 months." So it's kind of been our life. I really haven't known anything else but going from crisis to crisis. I'll tell you one thing that somebody said to me in 2008 when I was a brand new lawyer, and at the time I didn't really know whether it was true or not, and I just put a pin in it. But I think as I have gotten older, I agree. I joined the Complex Commercial Litigation Department at Weil Gotshal, and they told me litigation is recession-proof. And at the time, I thought, I mean, do I really believe that? And the fact is, in some ways, there is truth to it. Because what I've seen is that when there's a lot of money to go around, people fight over it. And when there's little money to go around, people fight over it. And so the upshot from that is that people are always fighting about money. So litigation is always going to be there. There is, I think, an interesting angle in that litigation finance is a way to access capital for litigation, which is a multi-year process, which will eventually resolve one way or another. And if you believe in the righteousness, it's actually the perfect vehicle for early capitalization of something that will resolve itself further down the line. So from that perspective, I don't think recession is a bad thing. In fact, you know, during the pandemic, litigation finance kept doing its job, kept going along. I mean, things were a little bit complicated because all the cases got kicked down the line. But that's what I'm saying, right? Cases get kicked down the line, but they don't get forever deferred. There is something to be said about business interruption cases. Those definitely we could see an uptick. And debtor in possession, there's, you know, increasing case law. There was a Fifth Circuit case law that came out, I want to say about a year ago at this point. Yeah, just about a year ago. Confirming the fact that trustees are authorized to go out and get litigation financing in order to fund recuperation of assets for the estate. So all of that points to the fact that litigation finance continues to be not only very viable, but very needed in some cases if the recession and if business interruption situations and if breaches are on the upswing. You want to be able to get funding to be able to hold people accountable to their agreements and then find a resolution.
Got it. And so I did mention this earlier. I want to get back into it though. Accredited investors can invest through the platform. How does this process work? What should prospective investors know about LexShares if they're considering an investment?
Right. So let's start with a disclaimer. I'm on the business development side of things, and so the investing investor relations are on the other side of the house, and I usually do not delve into that. So I'm going to tell you what I know with that caveat. LexShares is a phenomenally flexible platform, and investors can come in. And we have what we have a it's called a platform literally, And once the investors get through the hoops, the requirements, which those I do not deal with on a daily basis, so I'm not going to speak on that. But once the investors come into the inner circle, as you want to call it, there's this fantastic platform where cases get put up for funding. And investors can decide whether they want to or not contribute to this particular case. And we provide information about it. And Lectures has a fund that it invests from itself. It's not just only on the investors, right? There's a fund, and then there's platform investors, and there's usually a blended investment strategy. And investors can literally see the case pop up, and if they're interested and they like it, they can invest into it. And so I will tell you that when I first started at LexShares, one of the reasons that I was so enamored with it was this public-facing, quasi-crowdfunding approach, because it seemed like such a modern, fresh vehicle to have people truly invest in cases that, you know, pull on their heartstrings, or they think, you know, this is a good, of course, they want to make money, but there's also a sense of, I want to be part of this, and I'm invested in it, not just financially, but I'm invested in it emotionally, and I want to help this case move forward.
So final question for you now, we're at the very start of 2023, what are some of the challenges you're facing at the moment, and how are you tackling those at LexShares?
I can tell you my challenge personally has been, we'd like to see more, I guess it's a challenge, but it's a challenge that's not particular to this time, or even I think to LexShares, because I'm really trying to sit down with this question that you asked, and I thought, you know, I don't think it's a challenge to LexShares. I think the issue will always be that, and the barometer confirmed this, we will fund less than 5% of the cases that come our way. And so I think the challenge is always, we want to see and we want to find a higher volume of good cases, a higher volume of vetted cases. And that is something I think anybody would want to see. One way to help doing that is more personal connection. That's certainly something that I've been working on as part of my role at LexShares. It's creating those personal connections with lawyers and law firms so that you can really get to know each other. We'd really like to be building on longer term relationships with lawyers and law firms so that we can be invested with them. Because as you know, a litigation finance company can never exert any control whatsoever on the law firm or on the case. And that's fair. That's the way it needs to be. And also, though, it is helpful if you can't have control to have an ongoing relationship, in the sense of, these are people we trust, these are people who do good work, these are people we're in it for the long run. So I think it might be a challenge, in the sense of, we'd like to build more on that. We'd like to be able to have more in-depth, long-term, you know, financing relationships, and not only do one-off deals. That's a big one. And then always the difficulty of, but this is just a standard difficulty, with mass torts, you always have to be careful, because with every mass tort life cycle, there's going to be a moment where everybody gets really enthusiastic about cases, and then they oversubscribe. And one thing we're always very careful of is really, really looking into this idea of the quality of the portfolio. And actually, I have one thing that came up while I was saying this. One thing that's going to loom on the horizon that is always a very hot topic is the issue of disclosure. We've seen out of Delaware, Judge Connolly is very, very attached to this idea of disclosure. And I will tell you that for me, as a plaintiff's attorney, I come at this with a pretty negative bent. I've spent way too many hours of my life and way too much stress and, you know, moments of my existence wasted on defense attorneys making hay of minor issues just to, you know, drain the case. And I know that's somewhat of a negative view, but it is what I have experienced as a plaintiff's attorney for over a decade. And so when I see arguments for disclosure, I get worried that litigation finance is just going to become a hotbed for delay tactics. And that would really, really bother me, because that's not the point of litigation finance. The point is to help plaintiffs get access to more resources so that they're not constantly underfunded and overspent. And the idea that disclosure may be a path to undermining this access to justice that plaintiffs have finally been able to find really irks me. So I'm hoping that the issue of disclosure will get resolved towards a sensible, but narrow, but sensible view of disclosure, in the sense of maybe you have to disclose that the financing is in place. Maybe you have to disclose the name of the finance company. But I would like to see judges be really strict once that disclosure has been made before allowing sideshow discovery into that topic. So for me, that's probably going to be the big one in 2023.
Yeah, disclosure has definitely been a hot topic for a long time. And I expect you'll be right, and it's going to continue to be one. And certainly what you mentioned about this being a relationship business, litigation funding, it definitely makes a lot of sense. That's something we've heard from funders before as well. So Juji, thank you so much for coming on here and telling us more about LexShares. This is really unique business model. This is great stuff. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this, and I really hope we get to fund some justice this year.
Sure you will. And if you want to be a part of that, if you want to learn more about LexShares' approach, you can visit them at their website, www.lexshares.com. That's LexShares.com. And that's it for this episode of Litigation Finance Podcast. We'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for watching, everyone. See you next time.